Hello, everyone. I am Jennifer Braverman.
And I'm Ellen Selm.
And welcome to our podcast, Stories from the Earth,
where we explore humankind's relationship and connection with the natural world.
We would like to take a quick moment to invite our listeners to consider supporting us through a humble little donation. You can go to our Patreon page and support us with a little donation, either $1, $5, or $10. And the donations will go towards helping us with future projects, such as launching an herbal educational curriculum we've dubbed the People's Herb School, as well as funding to help take the show on the road and do some on-site reviews and interviews at herb farms and schools and other interesting places relevant to our podcast. You can also support us by subscribing to our YouTube channel and following us on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook, and also giving us a review or a rating on Apple Podcasts. And all the support is appreciated. So thank you very much.
Today, we are speaking with a woman who, if you're in Western North Carolina and into anything earthy at all, I feel she probably needs no introduction. But for the non-local listeners, we welcome Natalie Bogwalker. She is the founder and director of Wild Abundance, which is sort of a living and loving back to land education center where she is the primary instructor for permaculture, gardening, carpentry, natural building, homesteading, foraging and medicine making, women's empowerment, and primitive skills. Natalie and her family live at Wild Abundance Homestead Campus in the Southern Appalachians here. She balances her time between managing the logistics of the school, teaching and tending the garden, building, playing with her daughter and partner, visiting wild places, connecting with her community, and basking in the beauty of nature. Amidst all of this, she's constantly scheming on how to inspire more people to make positive, ecologically minded changes in their lives and the wider world, which is very appropriate for our theme here. So we're so excited to have you, Natalie.
Thank you. I'm you excited to be here.
Truly a Jill of all trades.
Yeah, I've done a few things. Been around the block.
Now, I first heard of you a few years back when I saw some flyers posted around Asheville for the original Firefly gatherings that you were part of. And I believe you helped orchestrate that, if I'm correct. I know that's a really detailed story, but can you get into kind of how all of this stuff that you're known for came about? So what is kind of your background that even led you into all of this?
Yeah, so I was actually a genetic engineering student. I was quite studious. And then I got, and this is in Washington State, and then I got hit by a car. And it just totally changed my life and changed my what I thought was important. Like, I had a near-death experience, and it's really cool. I mean, it was really probably the best thing that's happened in my life was getting hit by this car. It was a very strong initiatory experience, and it's something that in our culture we don't have a lot of, and it found me. When I was 19, I got sent for a big loop, and I went traveling, and I lived on communes, and I went traveling all over the world. And then I got a small settlement from the insurance company, which allowed that. And then I went back to school and studied ecological agriculture. So I have a degree in ecological agriculture, and that was just really important for me. Like, as I traveled and lived at different communities, growing food seemed like just such an important piece of being part of community. So community and cooperatives were a really big part of my background, and also growing food. But when I was in school, I realized that while I loved growing food and I loved having relationship with food, a really strong relationship with food and with plants, that being a farmer, a vegetable farmer, was not for me. It just, at the time, seemed like a lot of work with backbreaking work without the compensation that is just crazy in this country, how farmers, what a struggle it is for farmers. And so then I got really into activism and really into green anarchism specifically. And I ended up doing more traveling and really working in various different farms and gardens. And I helped start a community garden at a squat in Barcelona in my young years, did a lot of bike touring. And did catering. I ran co-ran a cooperative local foods catering company. And then I got really into primitive skills, and I lived at this place called Wild Roots, which is in Madison County, for 5 years. And we started all of our fire by friction, cooked all of our food on open fire. And I lived very primitively, at first in a tent and then in a camper and then in a bark hut that I built. And then I got into natural building, and I built myself a small straw clay cabin, and just was really loving living so close to the earth. And felt I had also in my activist years had a worked for nonprofits a good bit, and I felt the need to be sharing my passion for living close with the earth. And so I started the Firefly Gathering and drafted my friend Caleb Wallace to do it with me. And so that was a beautiful venture, and one that's grown, and gave that up about 5 years ago. First primitive or earth skills gathering that was major one that's been started by a woman in the US. And so it felt really important to me to pass it on to female leadership. And so it is currently in female leadership, and it's great. I just show up and teach classes and hang out and go swimming and have deep, profound conversations and take classes with my daughter. And so that's all been really, really beautiful and lovely. About 12 years ago, I started Wild Abundance. And so Wild Abundance is a school where we focus on skills for reconnecting with the earth, and we run between 4 and 14 day workshops. Right now, our biggest thing is women's carpentry, although we do a lot of other natural building and other classes. Women's basic carpentry, we run 14 times a year. We have 3 tiny house classes a year. We have a couple women's rewilding classes each year, and 2 wildcrafting and medicine making classes. And then we run a timber framing class and a permaculture class. Permaculture is a bit of a tricky word, and I encourage anyone who has curiosity about us using it to check out our permaculture page, because we really go into it on that class page. And we also have an online gardening school and an online tiny house class. So Wild Abundance has grown. We have about 10 staff, and then we have about 10 teachers that we employ. And it is just kind of the center for learning and for especially women's empowerment. Like, we're women run, the whole admin team is women, and we mostly serve women. Although in our tiny house classes, like some of our classes, we have people of all genders, but women and serving women is really important to us in like bringing the ability to like meet our needs and meet each other's needs in a cooperative way. I think that our culture has really taken away a lot of the ability to meet basic needs. And so Wild Abundance, you know, has really stepped in order to help people regain those skills that like, that, you know, most people used to be able to do, as well as like messing with and disrupting gender norms. Like with the women's carpentry, it's just so delightful and fabulous to have all these women like feeling just so empowered with a skill that in most of our lifetimes has been pretty male dominated. So yeah, that's kind of me and Wild Abundance in a nutshell. The bio that you read, I think I need to update that bio, because I'm no longer partnered, but my ex-partner and the father of my child still lives on the land. He built his own house. We had been living in the house I built together, and then he built his own house, and our daughter is able to go back and forth between our houses, and it takes about 2 minutes through this lovely walk in the woods. So that is pretty sweet. And also at this point, I am still the director of Wild Abundance, but I have mostly retired from teaching and more train other people to do the teaching is where a lot of my energy goes, along with just administering and directing the whole shenanigan that is Wild Abundance.
That women's carpentry class has been on my bucket list for a while. One of these days I will be.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, you have so much that you offer. It's just amazing. So I'm going to put the link to the website, and I encourage everyone to check it out, because it's just amazing.
Thank you. The
range of classes and learning opportunities that you have.
Yeah, we really care about it and put a lot. There's a lot of people that put a lot of energy and love into making it happen. And it's just so cool to work with a business where the staff, we really like each other and respect each other and really care deeply about what we're doing. And that we have a really strong culture of feedback. That's something that actually happened because we got some kind of rough anonymous feedback a few years ago. And so we hired a feedback consultant, and it's been really transformative and awesome to just be so focused on continuous improvement and a feedback culture. And I mean, we've always been into continuous improvement, but figuring out ways to interweave feedback through our organization has been really transformative and awesome.
So that might somewhat touch upon the next question I had, which was, what are some of the biggest challenges that you faced in cultivating this lifestyle and the work that you do?
Yeah, I mean, I really like to see challenges as invitations for growth. Mm-hmm. I think it just makes life so much better when you can do that. and so some of the biggest challenges, I mean, one was getting a bunch of intense feedback a few years ago. And yeah, it was tricky. It was given anonymously to my staff to deliver to me. It was like kind of this tricky thing because it was like, for a moment, it felt like it was driving a wedge between me and the people that I work with, which, you know, they're all my friends. And like, I really like to blur the lines. Like in modern day, there's such a like, this is work and this is your social life. And that's not the model and the like village way that I want to live. Like I want to live an integrated life where like I love my work and where I like highly respect and enjoy the company of the people that I work with. And so when that came in, it was challenging, and it was just so beautiful, I think, how we worked through this really vulnerable content and really hard stuff and got help. And having that feedback consultant, this woman, Robin Funston, is fabulous. And so she really helped us to work through it and helped us to implement a bunch of processes to make it so that feedback is a bigger part of our culture. And so that was already happening, I think, within the staff level in a really good way. We have these quarterly meetings where we really look at each other, and it's a funny thing because I, you know, have this anarchist background, and it took me a long time to realize like, oh yeah, I'm a business person. I run a business and I should like learn from other people who have run businesses. And so I've started reading more management books, like Radical Management, and just like learning ways to really look at and accept like where we're at. Like we are running a business that is like a really beautiful force for connection and for people to come together and for people to connect with the earth, and to realize that being a business person isn't a bad thing. It can be a really beautiful thing. So she helped us to like during our closing circles to really solicit feedback in a way that felt really good, rather than just sending out feedback forms after the class, which is what we had done before because no one really fills those out. So yeah, and then integrating that into our monthly and quarterly and annual meetings so that the staff is addressing those gifts, you know, those jewels of feedback from participants in our classes and from our teachers as well. And it's really just helped our programs to grow and get better and better. So, yeah, I feel really thankful for that. Before I started Firefly, I was working with another Earth Skills event. And the event was kind of in a period of kind of dying, and there just weren't new participants. And to me, like this lifestyle just felt so cool and so important. And I just wanted to share it with as many people as possible. They just didn't have a good marketing strategy. So I drafted up this like 17-page proposal for their marketing strategy to help enliven the event and bring new energy and bring more money into the organization. And they just were like, who are you, Miss like 25-year-old woman? Like, who are you? What are you? No. And so I was like, okay, I'll just start my own thing. And then, you know, within 2 years, the new event was bigger than that other event. And that was really interesting. And I think that...
Was the other one here in North Carolina as well? Or did you, had you moved in that time?
It was regional, but I don't really want to give specifics. Whatever the case, it wasn't competing. I was really careful to make it at a different time of year because I didn't want to take away business from them, because I really still respected them and loved what they were doing. It was tricky, you know, 15 years ago to be a woman doing this stuff. And there weren't really mentors in that level of leadership. I mean, there were definitely female mentors in those communities, but there'd been kind of like a glass ceiling, you know, so to speak.
Yeah.
But once I did go off on my own, there was a lot of energy for that. And that's something that, you know, I'm in my mid 40s and I feel so thankful for the women who have come before me, who have really, you know, set the stage to where I have been able to do like some pretty big things in the world. And without coming across like much blatant sexism. Like there have been incidents and there have been situations, but I've been really pretty blessed to be able to do what I've done. And I work hard and I command respect. And yeah, I haven't had to deal with that much overt sexism, which I'm really thankful for. And a piece of that is like, I definitely have like a strong yangness in my personality and energy. But yeah, so I feel really thankful for that. And I feel, you know, somebody recently said this really reflected this really beautiful thing to me, like that he had come, he's a Black man who does racial equity and song trainings. And he had come to Firefly and he said that he saw me and he saw Marissa, who's currently running Firefly, like walking together. And he just thought, how beautiful it is that these young women and young men are seeing strong female leaders in the Earth Skills community that are like leaders and not shy about it. And also not some like model skinny, you know, people that are that like fuller bodied women being in their power and leading such a beautiful thing. And just the modeling of that to the younger people, because I think that those young people are going to be like seeing that example of like, oh yeah, of course I could run an Earth Skills gathering. Like women do that all the time. This sort of thing just feels really good to me and feels good to me as far as, you know, offering this version of leadership that is really connected with Earth. And as far as other challenges, I mean, there's like building codes. Those are challenging, but we just figure out how to work with the system and find all the loopholes that we can find. And it all works out. When I was hugely pregnant, the building inspectors showed up at Wild Abundance. And they were like, this is really cool. I was teaching a group of kids up in the woods. And my partner at the time came up and he's like, Natalie, you better come down here. I'll work with the kids for a minute. And then there were three folks, one from the health department, one from the building department, and one from some other department. And they're like, everything you're doing is illegal, basically. And luckily, I called up an acquaintance, Eustace Conway, who'd been through similar things, and he coached me on how to deal with it. And there's this law in North Carolina called the Primitive Camp Law. And so most of our buildings were fine. And we happened upon this because we used an outhouse and or a composting outhouse and an outdoor shower and didn't have a septic tank. We had gray water, and that's very illegal in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And but there happened to be a sign at our local gas station that was like, need financial assistance installing a septic system in Western North Carolina? Call this number. And so we did, and they paid for 3/4 of it. Like, it was just such a blessing how that worked out. And we installed a permitted outhouse. Yeah, it ended up really being a blessing that happened when it happened, because we really grew a lot soon after that. And so having established doing things in a way that the authorities could accept was really helpful. Another challenge has been Wild Abundance, the the original campus exists on a gravel road and kind of a quarter mile into a gravel road that is all my friends. And the traffic that the school causes on the gravel road was really challenging to neighbors. And when that was coming up, I just couldn't conceive of how we could afford to buy another campus. And then at some point I was like, you know what? We can do that. We'll figure it out. And then I had written down all the things that we would need for another campus, including, and that we wanted. So like a lovely rushing creek and access to a paved, not very busy road, and at least 2 acres of relatively flat or like gently sloping land, and at least 5 acres total, and places for camping. And it'd be great if there was kind of a defunct house or a trailer there, because then it would already have electrical and septic and a well. And then within 2 weeks, I put it out into the world. And then within 2 weeks, one of my friends was like, oh, I know just the place. So we purchased another property for Wild Abundance last May of 2022. And so we've been very busily building up that new campus, and it's only five miles away from the original campus. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place. Cool. And we just demolished the defunct house that existed on that property. And we had built an office last year that we're going to move onto that spot. And yeah, it's a really lovely site, and it's a bigger financial risk than I've ever taken before, but it's really awesome because now we're just running a few classes at the original campus, and then neighbors are very happy. It's a kind of a win-win because we've been able to design this new campus in a way that the geographical constraints of the old campus just never could have held. And so it's like the things that seem like the biggest challenges, mm-hmm. you know, if you approach them correctly. And I mean, obviously this isn't true of like certain things. Sure. Like I'm not talking about like racism and, you know, genocide, right. And all of these things. But like in my relatively privileged life as a white cisgendered US citizen, the biggest challenges that have been thrown my way have ended up being some of the greatest gifts. And another piece of it is I started the project of Wild Abundance with $5,000. like I bought the land with like $20,000 that I'd saved up, and I borrowed another $25,000 from various private people. And then I had $5,000 to start the project with. And yeah, which is not much. And I think that those like humble beginnings have really been inspiring to a lot of people and created the necessity for us to start this whole like work party culture and tap into the work party culture that already existed to help get things done and just have creative ways of making things work, which I think has been really inspiring of the community and of other students. The biggest challenges have been some of the greatest gifts that we've had.
And it sounds like with the new space, since you have that room to more comfortably grow and have the access for the guests to come, that you know, that's essentially, it'll pay for itself in the long run, because
growing.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. I think it'll pay for itself within a few years. It's pretty amazing.
All right. So switching gears a little bit, what are your primary or favorite plant allies, perhaps ones who've helped you the most and or taught you the most?
You know, spikenard, which is an Aralia, it's in the ginseng family. It's like, it's a plant that I actually did a bas relief, which is like a sculpture from two dimension. I did a bas relief of it on the first cabin I ever built, a little cob bas relief of it. And it's a plant that just really, really speaks to me. And like, I've used the medicine a little bit, but more so I just see it really as a very strong ally in my life. And just with like beautiful, gentle fierceness, I think is how I think of that plant. And also just like heart softening. So like the fierceness coupled with the Cancer moon heart that that I have and that I see that that plant has. Yeah, I find spikenard really, really inspiring in my life. Let's see here. Tulip poplar, the tree tulip poplar, which is not actually a poplar. It's in the magnolia family. But tulip poplars, I've built with them a lot. The first thing that I ever built, or the first house I ever built, was a Catawba. Catawba is a local tribe, and they built this particular style of bark lodge, which is like kind of a long house with tulip poplar bark. So that's the first dwelling that I have built, and I lived in it for a while. Then it became the like community kitchen at Wild Roots, where I used to live. And you know, these primitive structures tend to weather pretty quickly and be replaced in this culture of like, you know, community building. But yeah, so the tulip poplar, I just find to be so beautiful. I've used its wood a good bit for various applications, for trim and for interior paneling. And I've taught a lot of spoon carving classes, and I usually start people off with tulip poplar because it's pretty straight grained and because it's really relatively soft and easy to carve. And when you first split it, it's just so beautiful as like purples and blues and greens when the wood is still wet and green. Yeah. And the flowers really speak to me. And tulip poplar also is just kind of goofy. And I have kind of a stylized tulip poplar tree in bas relief on my cabin right now too. And it's really, yeah, really lovely. So also call out for elderberry. I used to make a good bit of my living selling elderberry syrup, and would go by canoe and gather elderberries on a river, and yeah, get gallons and gallons and gallons of elderberries, and it's really helped my health. And I would say those three are really strong allies for me.
The way you describe the poplar sounds like it's like a cozy ally. You know, it makes your spoon, it makes your house, and yeah.
There's a picture, if anyone's interested, of that house, I believe, on your website.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of cool pictures on
the website. There are.
Also on Instagram. Right now, we're lucky enough that our social media manager is an amazing photographer, Sarah, too. She's actually about to update all the pictures on our About page because we've really grown a lot. And so she's going to be putting a bunch of new pictures up there of the current staff. And she's... And so, yeah, she's a photographer and manages the social media, which is just amazing. So, yeah, we're really lucky to have her.
So we do a lot of book review episodes, and we always like to ask our guests, what are some of your favorite and most inspirational books pertaining to these types of skills and interests, be it foraging or herbal medicine or natural building, permaculture, et cetera? What do you like to recommend to people?
Mm-hmm. You know, one of my favorite natural building books was written by Clark Snell and Tim Callahan, and who are both locals. And Tim Callahan actually has become a really good friend, and we've designed some buildings together. It's so funny. I was like reaching out to him to be a teacher for one of our natural building program because he's an expert in hempcrete, which I think is just such a cool and promising natural building technique. I was like kind of nervous about reaching out to him, and I got his number from a friend, and then I called him, and he's like, Natalie, you know me, we're in dream group together. Like, oh my gosh, I just never put it together that's who it was, who was in my dream group. And dream work has been hugely influential in my life. That is an excellent book. You know, I'm really exploring my journey into the perimenopausal years, which are something is a piece that I maybe would love to just jam out about with you all another time separately, because it's something that's very, very prominent for me in my life as a middle-aged woman, and something that I'm like really getting into exploring, because I think culture just generally, or our culture, really shies away from it and just like sees like aging women as like losing all their use in society because we are no longer like reproductive, you know? I mean, yeah. I guess I could have a kid, but I don't want to have a kid right now, that's for sure. But I'm glad I did. Whatever the case, I've been really getting into books in that journey right now. And so The Wisdom of Menopause has been a really important book for me. And The Hormone Intelligence has also been a really lovely, important book. Another one, which is, again, not necessarily having to do directly with carpentry or with gardening, but I would highly recommend, is Conscious Uncoupling has been just an extremely helpful book for me to look at how to use a breakup, and especially the breakup with the father of my child, not as like a shameful thing, but as like a springboard for self-growth. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'd really recommend that. And with gardening, there is a woman named Carol Depp who lives in Oregon, and her work I just really, really love. And she has a book called Breed Your Own Vegetable Varieties. And she has some other books too. Yeah, I'd really recommend them. And Chloe, who I work with very, very intimately, she has worked with Wild Abundance for 9 years. And she actually is moving on, although she and I produced the online gardening school together. And so she'll still stay part of that. And she gave me 9 months notice, which was quite nice. But so she and I are in the midst of writing a gardening book. And ooh, nice. We've almost completed the manuscript. We're just shopping it out to different publishers. So definitely watch out for that. And it will carry the title Wild Abundance. Awesome. And then it has a subtitle specifically about gardening. So that's the first in a series of books that we've mostly already written. Also, Steve Solomon, I think, is a really good gardening author. He's written several books, some of which are more applicable to the Pacific Northwest where I studied gardening. And I mean, it's really different here in the Southeast, but some of it is still really relevant. I'd send you all a few other, we have like this big glossary for one of our programs, and we have a glossary specifically for our online gardening school. There's like 25 books, which we give a little like synopsis of like, what it's good for, whether it's worth reading or not, and what for, and this sort of stuff. So, and the same thing with our Tiny House Academy. With building, there is a fabulous book that is called, what is it called? It's called, I will get that to you and you can put it in the show notes.
Okay. Yeah, I'll put all of these in the show notes for people to look up and everything else. And we'll be sure to look for your book so that we can
interview you about that.
So in a world that's been going and will continue to go through a lot with climate change impacts, pandemics and war, etc., what role do you see Wild Abundance and yourself playing in helping live in a way that leads to more balance?
That's a good question. In the midst of climate chaos and in the midst of political chaos, I think that for me, the best route to go is to build community and to build our skills for self-sufficiency and interdependence. And that may have been the same answer that I would have given 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And I think that it's a solution that is really basic. And it's something that our ancestors, like building community and building self-sufficiency and interdependence, are like things that I think are always a human yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
the basic human instinct.
Yeah. And I mean, another piece of the chaos, I think, is technocracy, you know, and the domination of social media and the domination of all of these like abstract ways of living. And I think that the more we can get into like we don't all need to grow a garden. We don't all need to build our own house. But I think having some understanding of all of these things, of what it takes and what it takes to provide for our basic needs is really important, because then we can have understanding and appreciation for how those things happen. And, you know, one reason why a lot of people take our women's carpentry class is because they have been scammed before, you know, because a lot of builders think that women don't know anything about building, you know, these sorts of things. And so just having a basic understanding and maybe going and doing all the things yourself, or maybe just having appreciation where you can be like, go to the farmer's market and be like, oh my gosh, you have grown these beautiful carrots. Thank you so much for growing these beautiful carrots. I know how much work it is to grow these beautiful carrots. And I can understand, and I can like empathize, and I can feel the like love and dedication that has gone into growing this food, because I have grown carrots and I know it's really hard and kind of a pain in the ass, you know, and beautiful. And it might take 20 days to get them to germinate, you know, so it's to emerge from the soil from when you plant them and watering them every day and these sorts of things. So I think that spreading skills for living closely with the earth, whether it is a situation where there's like food shortages and there's no food getting to stores, or there's no gas to get to the stores, or whatever the case may be, or if it's just living in the midst of a global society where our connection with the land and with each other is really like mediated by all of this technology, I think that no matter what's going on in the world, if we can have a connection with each other and like the skills to be able to communicate with each other, the skills to be able to be in touch with our bodies and to use our plant allies to be able to help in our connection with our bodies and like grow food and work on our house or whatever. Like, I think all of these skills are just pretty paramount to living in a connected way, no matter what the circumstances of the world are.
And the society where we live in, you don't get taught hardly any of that.
No,
nothing. Like,
no,
you know,
no.
I mean, a lot of works are hierarchical. So there's no, yeah, like there's communication one way. Your bosses do this and you got to do it. Like, you can say a comment, but there's no feedback. There's no kind of relationship that sort of is a communication and sort of like acknowledges each person and just, I'm forgetting, the words are not coming to me, but it's just so like, it's not really a relationship. It's just like a one way,
like a top down system instead of an interrelated web. Yeah. And like figuring out how to transform our lives and how to gain the tools to be able to have an interrelated web where there's communication that goes back and forth in a relatively lateral way, or in a hierarchical way, but a functional hierarchy. Yeah. Like, I think that those are skills that we teach, whether it's us teaching communication or whether it's us hosting a women's carpentry class and modeling this sort of interaction, and like the instructors being like respectful of the students and interested in what they have to say. And there is no dumb question. And, oh, this is going on, thanks so much for telling us, and we're going to figure that out, you know. And they're cultivating community between the students who come from different walks of life, but have so much in common. Like, I get that over and over again from students. I recently, one of the students invited a bunch of the staff and students to go out to dinner. And he like bought us all dinners at the Smoky Park Supper Club, which is fabulous. And something I was hearing over and over again was how much they appreciated getting to know each other and how they just liked everyone in the class and just felt so much like community. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm just shocked over and over again by like how lovely our students are and how well they do at supporting each other. And yeah, just modeling that and then people bringing that back into their everyday life is just a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about all that and kind of getting back to sort of the heart of human dynamics and function, you know, it just kind of had a little light bulb moment in my head where I was thinking like, that's such a, like that's such an important thing for people to pause and think about. This society where everything is go, 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 and not a functioning hierarchy necessarily, et cetera, is relatively new. Like it's such a small blip on the history of human interrelation. So maybe that means that because of the work places like Wild Abundance are doing, and because more people are getting interested in trying to be more self-sufficient in one way or another, I think, you know, speaking again about challenges presenting opportunity, you know, how many people did we hear about, like when COVID hit, they suddenly were baking bread and growing a garden and they'd never done that before, because, you know, it's like, it sucks that it took like a panic moment to kick it in, but it's also like, okay, people can get back to the roots of like real living, so to speak.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, definitely.
So on that note, what are some of the your favorite ways to decompress and get grounded and connect with nature when everything's kind of crazy all around?
I like to meditate in the woods. That's a really big one. I like to take baths. That's not really getting out in nature, but it's something that I think for my body right now, like getting the magnesium into my body is just feeling really important for decompressing and for like being able to feel good in my body. Just going to the woods, being in wild water. I really like to get my body in wild water. And I feel so blessed to live in a place where there's so much wild water. You know, it's like November and I went for a hike and I was like, huh. You know, I feel inspired to do a cold plunge in this creek right now. And it just felt so enlivening and so lovely. And I think just so good for my lymphatic system and for my spirit. And just like taking the time to sit with trees. Gardening is a huge one. I actually took the year off gardening. It's my second year off in over 20 years. And so that's been really interesting to not have that outlet, but it's also been kind of refreshing, like to be like, oh, I don't have to do this. This is something that I want to choose. And next year I'm going to grow a garden again. And I'm going to be doing it with my friend and collaborator in so many ways, Chloe. I think gardening and walking in the woods, sitting with water, and getting in water, wild water, are kind of the biggest things for me.
I take baths almost every night.
So good.
Yeah, there's something about getting in that water. It's just very, very therapeutic. And I also used to go do a little swimming. I'm putting it in air quotes here. The kick, you know, I just sort of got in the water and like paddle around with my little kickboard. And my mom was like, just go to the water. It's nice. Just something about it. Like,
yeah,
the motion. I don't know. It just helps.
Yeah. I go to the ocean occasionally too. And that's fabulous. I don't want to live near the ocean, but I love going to the ocean. Yeah. Mama Ocean.
Yeah.
Take it all away.
So on your journey, was there anyone who has really inspired and supported you along your path? Do you have anyone that you would consider a mentor?
Yeah, there's a few of them. Margaret Mathewson, who is on the West Coast. She actually has her PhD in ethnobotany. She is a basket weaver, and she's also a martial artist and a teacher. And yeah, she's been really inspiring for me. Steve Watts, he's passed now, but he has been an amazing mentor. And he was a primitive skills practitioner and author. And Beatriz Mendoza is a dear friend of mine who just had so much magic in her. And she also passed. We were pregnant together. And we're about the same age. She's a little bit younger than me, but in a lot of ways, she has been a deep mentor for me. And my daughter, I had her a month before my 38th birthday, and it's phenomenal, like how much she teaches me over and over and over again. And so, yeah. And my mom was, yeah, just such an amazing woman in my life and got me first introduced me to wild foods. My aunt, she got me really into being in the outdoors. And yeah, those are probably my biggest mentors.
So you mentioned your daughter, and I was actually the same age coming up on my 38th birthday when I had mine. So I'm curious, how did becoming a mother impact your work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was the sole breadwinner at the time. And so it was really intense and hard for a while. Like, pregnancy was pretty blissful, but breastfeeding just took so much out of me. And I was breastfeeding and I was supporting the family and running this whole business. And then COVID hit, and we're like, okay, we're gonna go out of business. We're gonna create this new online program, the online gardening school, because all these people in the world need it. And then I kind of hit a wall. Since turning 40, I have really realized that it doesn't work for me to be a workaholic. And being a mother has been a really big part of that and has helped to like emancipate me from this like overworking crazy cultural thing that I've had in my body. And that has like created a really lot of really beautiful things in the world. You know, like, had I not been a workaholic, I don't know if I would have started Wild Abundance or started Firefly or done all these things, but I'm over it. You know, I'm done with that phase of my life, and I need to be done with that phase of my life. And I think that my daughter's presence has been a huge part of that. And I think that she and her father, who I'm now not partners with, I think have both taught me a lot about the importance of setting boundaries and how to set boundaries. That boundaries need to have like a consequence. You can't just say, this is my boundary. You have to be like, this is my boundary. And if you don't respect it, this is what's going to happen. And that's something that I think being raised as a woman in this culture, I didn't understand. And I think that that's allowed me to have boundaries with myself around work and other stuff. Because when you're doing work that you really care about and you really believe in, and this is really rampant within nonprofit culture, along with a lot of different places, like, you just put your all into it. And the thing is you're all... If you're going 110% all the time, eventually you're going to run dry. Parenting, I think, has been a lot about me learning how to set boundaries with myself and with my daughter and with people in general. And to really also like let go of a lot of my ideas of what being a good person or a good mother or a good whatever is. And that's been huge. Like, something I've been realizing is like just really flirting with the unconventional. I don't know if I really want to live with a partner again. I think for so many years I was like looking for the father of my child. And so I was like looking for like a relationship, if it was like going somewhere. And if it wasn't like living with the person within a few years, what's wrong? And this sort of thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have so much autonomy and I have sovereignty and I love it. And like, I don't think I want to live with a man again. I mean, maybe when I'm older, who knows? But at this point, just really realizing like, oh, I really like the company of myself. I feel really good about this. And like, maybe I really enjoy having a lover and that's awesome. I don't need or want a partner. And like, figuring out how to get my needs met for like emotional intimacy and for depth within my like friend relationships has been really cool. And again, like, who knows what the future holds, but for right now, it's like the first time in my life that I've been single and really happy. That's been a cool thing. And I think something that being a parent has really brought to me.
For you learning and experiencing this now while your daughter's so young, you know, it's going to be like, you're going to be able to speak to your point about being raised as a woman in our culture, you're going to be able to help her break those barriers down a lot sooner now, since you've already been through it. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And she'll just be able to see me as like an autonomous, sovereign woman, happy and satisfied and not needing a man for my fulfillment. So yeah, it's cool.
How do you try to make your educational offerings as accessible as possible for people And what advice would you give anyone who, whether they've done any classes or not, dreams of trying to live so much closer to and from the earth?
Wow. Okay. I'll try to swing myself back in that direction.
We're going. Yeah.
I got it. Cool. So as far as making our classes as accessible as possible, we have a sliding scale. The bottom of the sliding scale is for folks that consider themselves low income. And then the top of the sliding scale is for folks that have a household income of $115,000 a year or more. And then we have students like place themselves within the sliding scale as they see fit. And it's been very successful. In order for us to run the classes, we need the majority of people to place themselves like kind of in the middle. And they do. It's awesome. That is just really inspiring and beautiful to me. So we have our sliding scale, and then we also have a scholarship program. And our scholarship program is specifically for people of the global majority, like also known as BIPOC folks. And so that's something that is really important to us in order to address just a lot of inequities that exist within our culture. And so, yeah, our scholarships program is specifically for BIPOC. And, you know, we're growing, we're exploring. I'd love to see us also have programs for single moms, but that's not something like we're an LLC, we're not a nonprofit. And so funding for those sorts of programs hasn't been super easy for us to figure out. And I think that we would love, and I don't know if anyone's listening, might be that person who works with a nonprofit who could partner with us to be able to create more and more programs, both for people of the global majority and for especially single moms. We feel pretty good about our program. Our scholarship program, we give away between our in-person and online programs over $30,000 in scholarships each year. And I feel good about that.
Yeah, I was looking at it and I felt it was really, really reasonable and affordable to a lot of people, you know, even if you were at the lower end. And I've struggled with money and being able to afford herbalism school and all that stuff. And it's very expensive. And some people, like $2,000 to go to herb school is nothing. So I was working for a big box retailer making very little money. You know, pretty much making the minimum wage in 2012. And so it was very, very difficult for me to, I wanted to go to herb school. Yeah, it was like almost, it was a no-go because there weren't any like non-paid apprenticeships. There weren't any real scholarships available to just a, like a basic white girl. It continues to frustrate me. I was fortunate, I was gifted money to be able to go. And I think it continues to be an issue. But when I saw your sliding scale and your offerings, I thought that was amazing. I appreciate that and I applaud you.
The sliding scale is just a really good model. I really appreciate it. And it's something that, like, you know, I want to pay my staff really, really well. And so it's nice to be able to have affordable pricing and also have pricing that if people are making good money, that they can pass that on so that my staff can also make good money. You know, it works.
Because unfortunately we need money in our society. And it's important to figure out like how to work out a way to do it where it's accessible for people, but yet also we can, you know, support ourselves. Definitely need more of that for sure out there.
To the second part of your question, Jennifer, like if someone's maybe doesn't live nearby, can't afford a class, whatever the case may be, but they just want to get started, where do you suggest people even start to dive in on their own as far as trying to live more back to land, etc.?
Yeah, that's a great question. One thing I do want to mention is we have a good number of free online classes that come available throughout the year. And so subscribing to our newsletter at wildabundance.net, you can totally get into those online classes. If you're interested in any of the classes, even if you're not ready to take them, getting on the waiting list for any of our classes can be a great way to get free resources and learn more about what's going on here. If you are really interested in gardening, I suggest going and talking to gardeners in your neighborhood, and they're going to have a huge wealth of knowledge and be able to really pass on information. If you're interested in doing carpentry and learning those skills, I think we have a lot of awesome free resources on YouTube and on our website. There's more complete offerings. And then also check out your community college. Like, I took a blacksmithing class at AB Tech, I don't know, 20 years ago, and it was awesome. It was super awesome. And I learned that I didn't want to do blacksmithing for a career because it's really smoky and shocking to the joints and all these things. But it was a great experience. And like, there's woodworking programs at lots of community colleges that are very low cost, and you can get access to the wood shop, which is great. It's a different flavor than, you know, learning in an all women's group or like an intensive like we offer here, which I think is a unique and special experience, but it's also very accessible. Often you can get a semester long class for like under $500 with shop fees and everything. And I think that there's lots of scholarships and funding available often at community colleges as well. There's also tool libraries that exist in lots of cities around the country and towns. And I think looking into tool libraries, and many of them have some classes and also have like a sense of community that is really lovely. And yeah, our website right now, if you look at it, you'll be able to find free classes. And we're in the midst of redoing some stuff on our website. So all the free resources will be in one place too. Our monthly newsletter, which is free, has a monthly thing about what to do. They're called get to do's. So they're like, what's wild foods to harvest and things to do in your garden, or if you have an orchard or whatever, like whether you have land or you don't have land, you can totally access the wild foods and these sorts of things, which are often weeds and grow everywhere. And so checking out our newsletter can be a really nice source of free resources.
Well, final question. What's the main takeaway that you would hope your students and people that are coming to visit you will leave with?
I'd say that it's okay to live outside the box. Like most of our students are a little bit free thinking and don't agree and don't buy into some of the pieces of mainstream society. And I think that a lot of culture teaches us that if we're going to be happy, we have to buy all these things and we have to conform and we have to have our house look such and such and drive a car that is like on par with our neighbor's car and these sorts of things. I think really it's okay to be outside the box. There's a lot of people like you. And yeah, that's something that I'm just amazed at over and over again with the students that come, is they're just like, oh my gosh, this is just so awesome to be around people like me. And I mean, I think I'm really resonant with y'all and what you're doing with your podcast. And it can be hard to remember that. When I was a teenager, I really didn't know that. And I think it's such a beautiful thing to be living in a world where we're really trying to get that message out to a lot of people.
Yeah, because a lot of times you just don't, you know, we're all in these little boxes. Back to connection, we are, you know, and it is always nice to find people who you're like, oh, you read my mind, or I agree with that. Oh my gosh! And then you can like bounce ideas off of each other, and it's just amazing to be in a group of people that think along the lines you think.
Yeah.
So cool.
That it's very re-energizing.
Exactly. Yeah. That is awesome. All right. So I think we are gonna leave it there for today. Yeah. I want to thank you so much, Natalie, for joining us. This has been amazing. We'd love to have you back hopefully for your book, or we can just chat some more. All right, we are going to put all the links to Wild Abundance down below, so you can check out the awesome websites, the awesome classes, all the books, everything that we have chatted about today. You can follow us, of course, you can listen on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and then please consider donating through our Patreon page or give us a review or a rating on Apple Podcasts. And we will talk to you next time. So bye.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Perimenopause.
Yeah, that would be a great topic, maybe for a panel, but we can talk about it. I think a lot of us, a lot of people that we interview, and us included, are sort of right before that menopause age. So I'm like 46.
Yeah, perimenopause. It's a word that a lot of people don't even know what it means, but it's like, you know, from 39 until menopause, generally.
I'm right there.
Big, broad time of life that is like, the changes are as profound as the changes that happen during puberty. And we just don't talk about it in our culture. And so I'm all about talking about it and demystifying it and like empowering us.
Yeah, that would be great. Cause I know nothing. I'm just, you know, and I'm like, oh, I really need to learn some stuff about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.